Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Culture Club time, and we're joined in studio by the man who is the Minister for Further and Higher Education, but also has a 6-month stint as Minister for Justice that he's undertaking while Helen McEntee is on maternity leave. Simon Harris, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Matt.
I promise you, we're not going down the political route, even though you might prefer if I went down the political route, and we're going to stick to what we've done with the other politicians who've joined us on Culture Club over the years, and we're going to go for the music and the movies and the television and the books, but we're going to start with the first single you could ever admit to buying or can remember buying.
Well, I was having to scratch my head for this because I grew up in a family who spent a lot of time in a car, particularly on summer holidays, with cassettes as they were then on, and being indoctrinated into Garth Brooks and Mary Black and Francis Black on all our family holidays, and my parents would have them on a loop. But the first single I can remember buying was the Red Hot Chili Peppers, By the Way.
And why did you pick that?
That I don't remember. But I do remember, I remember listening to it a hell of a lot in my bedroom growing up in Greystones as a young teenager. And it's a song that still stuck with me to today.
Let's hear a little bit of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, By the Way.
Standing in line to see the show tonight, and there's a light on, heavy glow. By the way, I tried to say I'd be there, waiting for Danny. The girl is singing songs to me beneath the marquee.
Rebellion against your parents and Garth Brooks.
I was just
Blacks.
Thinking that actually. It was bringing back memories of a moody teenager in the room at home in Greystone. So yeah.
Would you ever listen to the likes of the Red Hot Chili Peppers now, or is that very much from?
No, truthfully, I haven't. In fact, that's the first time I've heard that song in a long time. It's very nostalgic.
Never gone to see them in concert or anything?
No, never seen them in concert.
And what about Garth Brooks? Did you get to Garth Brooks last summer when he was in Dublin?
I'm half feeling like I was one of the few people in the country who didn't get to Garth Brooks.
No, I didn't go either.
My family went, my mother went, my brother and my sister, I think, went. So they were still.
Did they not ask you?
I don't think I was invited. Yeah, I must have that family row. But no, I didn't get there, but they certainly enjoyed it.
Are you a gig goer?
You know, for very obvious reasons, I haven't been in recent years between COVID, being Minister for Health and the likes.
It doesn't stop your party leader in Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, or the Finance or Public Expenditure Minister, Pascal Donoghue, from regular concert goers.
That's true, actually. And that's a fair point. They're probably, they must be better at their time management than I am.
They don't have young children.
And
like
they don't have young children. That's another one. But, I did used to get to quite a few music festivals, when I was younger. I mean, one of the best things I ever did, and actually if there's any younger person listening and looking for thinking of going inter-railing or anything as they get into the summer months, one of the best music festivals I ever went to was Sziget in Budapest. So during my college years, we went inter-railing, a bunch of my friends and I, and we would have travelled quite extensively around Europe, but we got ourselves to this festival, Sziget. I'm trying to remember what year it was, probably 2007, 2006 I think, and it's a week long. It's a week-long music festival. I think we did about 3 nights out of, which was probably long enough. But we had an absolutely amazing time, because if you think EP or you think Oxygen as back in the day, it's all of that and more and good weather, which was quite amazing.
And probably cheaper as well.
Probably cheaper, though. And definitely a different time in terms of cost. But like, we saw some amazing in bands there. We saw
the Kooks,
the Killers, Alanis Morissette. And many others. Those are the 3 that come to mind. Really, really great, though.
Well,
intense as well, though.
in what way?
well, three, if you think about it, like 3 days of festivaling, you know, I don't know. And I was younger then as well, but like 3 days, every day, heat, probably 30 odd degree heat.
Let's hear a little bit of the Killers Live. I don't think this is from Ziggot. I think this is from the Royal Albert Hall in London, but it is probably the Killers' best known song, Mr. Brightside.
Ah, yes.
Killers and Mr. Brightside. Simon Harris is with us for our Culture Club today. So, your favourite album is?
Definitely Maybe, but the Oasis album.
Why have you picked that one?
I think it has some of their... It's one I remember getting as well in my teenage years, but it also has some of their best on it. I mean, you've Lived Forever, Supersonic. I just think Oasis are and always will be. It's just such an iconic... such an iconic band, and I think that's a really great album. Though you could kind of pick many of the Oasis albums, I think. So yeah, pretty good Oasis fan. Saw them in Slane back, trying to remember back when now. But yeah, I think it was one of their last times together.
Yeah, before Noel and Liam went their separate ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one of their many bus stops, so it's permanent at this stage, I think, isn't it? Let's hear a little bit of Half the World Away.
Leave this city, this old town don't smell too pretty, and I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. And when I leave this island, I put myself into a soul asylum, 'cause I can feel the warning signs running around.
That's from the deluxe edition of Definitely Maybe, but I understand that's your favourite Oasis song.
Yeah, it is, and it's on my Spotify playlist as well. So I listen to that quite regularly.
Okay, but when it comes to a favourite artist, who would you go for?
I think it's. I mean, I try to support Irish artists, and I find myself listening to a lot of Irish music. Dermot Kennedy, probably a lot of the country, got me through a lot of the COVID period. I thought a couple of his songs, All My Friends, I thought was a particularly poignant one. I think we would have all been kind of listening to thinking, God, will we ever get to see our friends again? And then he obviously had the Better Days as well, which I think nearly became the anthem of COVID in many ways for people hoping that we'd get through this. So Dermot Kennedy, fan of. On my Spotify list, I also have... I also listen to Zombie a lot, The Cranberries, also The Script, and Codeline, as well, bit of chorus too. So I have an Irish music playlist on my Spotify that I tend to listen to most evenings when I'm out for my walk as well.
I believe Codaline, you also had one of their songs as your wedding song for the first dance, I'm told.
I did. It's probably a bit cheesy, but we had the one, but we kind of mushed it up with what is it now? I can't remember. Get up and stand up and dance with us. Stand up and dance with me. So we started with the kind of soppy bit, and then got into the more the fast moving one.
Aren't
as well.
Aren't you lucky that you remembered what the
I remember the first
was.
One? Thank God, yeah. But I have another Codaline memory as well that I.
But hold the sure, thought on the sure, Codaline sure. memory, because we'll play a little bit of you call the soppy song. The one.
You want me, and I'll be yours completely, for better or for worse. I know we'll have our disagreements, be fighting for no reason. I wouldn't change it for the world. 'Cause I knew the first day that I met you, I was never gonna let you. Let you slip away. And I still remember feeling nervous, trying to find the words to get you here today. You make my heart feel like it's summer.
Codaline, you're not going to tell me all the stories that they turned up to finish singing the song at your wedding or something.
No, before I tell you my Codaline story, I better correct myself, or I'll be in trouble around the dinner table. It was Shut Up and Dance With Me. It was the one went into Shut Up and Dance With Me. There, I better correct that one quickly. No, you'll probably remember without getting into the politics of it, you'll probably remember the 2016 general election, the government formation talks went on forever, and they were tense and tedious at times. And I remember driving myself in from Greystones to the talks each day with the with Independence. And I had the Codaline album on pretty much loop. But there were two songs that I thought, they like popped up on my screen in front of me. One was High Hopes and the other was Everything Works Out in the End. And I tell you, I used to have to sing those words very loudly on my way in just to convince myself we'd get there with Shane Ross. And I say that affectionately to my fellow Wicklow man, Shane Ross. But Codaline took me through the government formation talks, or at least the journey to and from them anyway.
Okay, Simon Harris is with us for the Culture Club here on The Last Word is JFM. We'll take one more thing. We get away from music before we take a break. Movies. And like a good Fine Gael man, you picked Michael Collins as your favourite movie.
Well, you'd have to be. It's true. And C, it's one of my first, I'm sure it wasn't my first, but it's one of my first memories of going to the cinema with them. My dad took me to see the movie, Michael Collins.
Which was 1996, if I remember right.
Yeah,
it came out the end of 96. So what age were you?
I was a 10. Okay. So it definitely was my first time. It's one of those first cinema memories. It's in my mind. And we went to see it in a cinema in Greystones that's now shut many years, but it also happens to be the cinema that was used in the Father Ted episode, you know, where they're outside saying, down with this sort of thing, careful.
Yes.
Now. So that is the cinema, just for your listeners to have a picture of it. And I remember going to see the Michael Collins movie in that cinema. Of course, it shaped my political views in due course, but I also think it's actually a brilliant movie, really well acted, obviously with Liam Neeson.
So how did it affect you as a 10-year-old?
Well, I remember, I suppose it was very educational, being quite frank. So, I mean, as a 10-year-old child, getting an insight into the Michael Collins story, into the struggle for independence and the like. So it was probably my first introduction, I guess, to Irish history. And I've gone on through school and beyond to obviously have an
interest. Because, you know, there would have been
Irish
people
history.
Who would have quibbled about the accuracy of it and
yeah.
some of the insinuations as to how he died at the end.
Well, we're all friends now, aren't we? And we obviously had I was at Béal na Bláth this year, which was addressed by a Fianna Fáil leader and a Fine Gael leader. But and I know the wind that shakes the barley and the view that perhaps presented the other side. So thankfully our country has come a hell of a long way since then. But no, look, it was a great movie, but it's also for me just a great memory of good family times. And of, yeah, that little small cinema in Greystone, so we're very proud locally, Beard and Father Ted.
Let's hear a little bit, though, from that Neil Jordan 1996 movie, Michael Collins. This is Liam Neeson as Collins delivering one of his famous speeches.
They can jail us. They can shoot us. They can even conscript us. They can use us as cannon fodder in the Somme. But... we have a weapon more powerful than any in the whole arsenal of their British Empire. And that weapon is our refusal. Our refusal to bow to any order but our own. Any institution but our own. Our friends at the Royal Irish Constabulary would like to shut me up.
Stop! Silence!
Jail me again. Shoot me. Who knows? But I'd like you to send them a message. If they shut me up, who'll take my place? Who's going to take my place? I can't hear you.
Michael Collins, and that was Liam Neeson as Michael Collins. What did you think of Neeson portraying him?
Oh, I thought he was superb. I thought he was really, really superb. And again, it's become kind of it's become an iconic performance. I suppose a whole generation of people in our country grew up now with their first introduction to Michael Collins and that history being through the portrayal of Liam Neeson. I'm also just remembering now, and I hope I'm right on this, but I'm actually pretty sure some of that movie was shot around Greystones as well. I think some of the houses used in
Bray, the Carlisle grounds, where Bray Wanderers play, was used as the location for the reenactment of Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, and I think some of the houses that were used, I have to check this now, but I think some of them were shot around Church Road and Greystones too, so it's just coming back to me as well.
Sure, you're like a Healy Ray for getting all the local references in.
I'm learning from them, yeah, absolutely.
You have one other movie you mentioned as well, one that's come up many times in this programme. Why have you put down The Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, it nearly comes up too often that you nearly kind of cringe slightly when you put it up, because I think if you were probably to do list of people's favourite movies, it probably appears more than most. Again, I just think it's a movie that you can watch time and time again. You can nearly get something new from it each and every time. There's so many strong characters in terms of the script, and actors in terms of how they perform. So yeah, it's one that I've watched countless times. So it merited a mention.
Okay, Simon Harris is going to stay with us because we'll get to favourite plays and musicals, books, TV shows and movies we've done the movies, but we'll get to all those other things when we come back after this break.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.
Welcome back to our Culture Club. We're on our January political series, as we do each year. And we're today joined by the Minister for Further and Higher Education and Acting Minister for Justice, Simon Harris. So, you have nominated as your favourite musical Hamilton. Like, I'd say at this stage, nearly 100 people in this slot.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I saw it in London. We have the soundtrack of it as well, which isn't on a regular basis. It's a powerful musical, because I think what you're seeing is the telling of a historical story. Now, you can debate the historical accuracy, though I think it's pretty much there. You're telling a historical story about maybe a forgotten founding father of the States in Alexander Hamilton, but combining it with very modern music and the likes, and therefore probably making a political or historical story accessible to a whole new generation of people. I haven't seen yet, though I believe it's out or about to come out, I think, on Disney as a movie or something. I haven't seen it.
Oh, there is a version of it available, a stage version, yeah.
But I think it's a very powerful musical. I've seen a fair few musicals over the years. The Lion King is a pretty powerful one in terms of the score. I saw Wicked as well. But I think Hamilton is the musical of its time.
Let's hear a little bit of Satisfied.
Give it up for the maid of honor, Angelica Schuyler!
Yeah. A toast to the groom.
To the groom, to the groom, to the groom.
To the bride.
To the bride.
To the bride.
Come your sister.
Angelica.
That's always by your side. To your union.
To the revolution.
And the hope that you provide.
Always
satisfied.
satisfied from Hamilton. Now, as it turns out, I understand that you actually had ambitions yourself. Not as actually a performer on stage, but to actually write for the stage.
Yeah, this story sounds strange every time I tell it, but sure, why not? So growing up, my mother enrolled all of us, I think, in kind of speech and drama classes, and the great late Gladys Sheehan, who's quite an institution in and of herself, was our drama teacher. And when I was a young teenager, I wrote a play called On the Run. And that's actually an embarrassing story to tell, but we're in too deep now. It was a story about two kids who basically ran away from home and the adventure they went on. However, the most exciting thing about it was, well, two things. One, we actually staged it in Greystones, and a load of other young people and older young people than I was at the time got involved in helping putting it on and making the set. And we actually staged it for, I think, 5 nights in a hall called St. Patrick's Hall. And that in and of itself was hugely exciting. But the second thing, and the thing that has stuck with me to this day, was I was really fortunate to have an incredible neighbour and a real gentleman called Bernard Farrell, the very well-known playwright in this country, lives in Redford Park, where I'm from locally. And I remember knocking on the door of Bernard's house as a timid young teenager and asking for his help, which again sounds like an outrageous thing to do, this amazing playwright that Bernard is. And he so kindly helped me and guided me with it, and then did even more than that, came to the opening night, brought Ben Barnes, who was the artistic director of the Abbey at the time, and then they very kindly invited me. And again, this young random teenager very kindly invited me to go to a couple of it was kind of weekend seminars in the Abbey Theatre with the late, great Hugh Leonard. My family and I got invited to see the production of Da, one of Hugh Leonard's amazing plays. And I actually have here with me two books that Hugh Leonard gave me of two of his plays, The Mask of Moriarty and Summer. So whilst I certainly haven't gone into playwriting or drama, and I'm in a very different sphere these days.
And did you have that incredible ambition after
that? Never in a really serious way, but it's certainly writing is and was something that I really enjoy, and certainly drama and writing and all my friends in speech and drama growing up was a big part of who I was growing up. And I suppose some of the skills that you learn in terms of writing and
what age were you at this stage?
I was in first year in secondary school, so I was about 13, I think. Yeah.
Okay, you say it was about two children on the run or running away from home.
It wasn't inspired by my family or anything. Yeah, just
because
in case.
I'm told that it dealt with subjects such as alcoholism and child abuse and death. You were doing that as a first year in secondary school.
Well, I think that's a very dark take. I think that's a very dark take on it. It was more two kind of young people who ran away from home. Geez, I dug out the script in the attic of my house before I came on this program and read it, and I was it was a very interesting time in my life, a very interesting experience. But like I say, something that always struck with me was the huge generosity of some amazing giants of theatre in Ireland and of playwriting, not just in Ireland, internationally. And how they were willing to support a little 13-year-old boy in Greystone.
And you went knocking on the door, which is a skill you needed as a politician.
Well, I still did a bit of that, yeah.
Exactly. Favourite book or author? What have you gone for?
So, as a child, and I always like promoting children's reading because it's one of the best gifts my parents gave me, but I was hooked on the Roald Dahl books as a young person. I remember doing I think it was MS Readathon, back when I was growing up, my sister and I being in kind of mass competition as to who could read more books. So one of the greatest gifts my parents ever gave us, and that I want to pass on to my children, is the gift of reading. In terms of today, a mixture, I suppose.
We actually have a little bit of Roald Dahl.
Oh, great.
Matilda is back in the cinemas, I think, soon. We have the book read by Kate Winslet.
Matilda's brother Michael was a perfectly normal boy. But the sister, as I said, was something to make your eyes pop. By the age of 1.5, her speech was perfect, and she knew as many words as most grown-ups. The parents, instead of applauding her, called her a noisy chatterbox and told her sharply that small girls should be seen and not heard. By the time she was 3, Matilda had taught herself to read by studying newspapers and magazines that lay around the house. At the age of 4, she could read fast and well, and she naturally began hankering after books. The only book in the whole of this enlightened household was something called Easy Cooking, belonging to her mother. And when she had read this from cover to cover and had learnt all the recipes by heart, she decided she wanted something more interesting.
"Daddy," she said, "do you think you could buy me a book?"
"A book?" he said. "What do you want a flaming book for?"
"To read, Daddy."
"What's wrong with a telly, for heaven's sake? We've got a lovely telly with a 12-inch screen, and now you come asking for a book? You're getting spoilt, my girl."
Kate Winslet reading from the opening of Matilda by Roald Dahl. What about now? Do you get time to read now?
I do, not as much as I'd like. I end up reading a lot of things to do at work, but I find Audible helps in that regard. And I must say there's something particularly powerful about listening to, I think particularly biographies read by the author. So listened on Audible to the Barack Obama one recently, also listened to the Michelle Obama one, just finished the Tony Blair book, is it A Journey? His autobiography.
That's a long time since that came out. I remember interviewing him at the time, yeah, in 2010 when he brought
absolutely.
That out.
And it's a great read. I mean, controversial political figure in some ways, but still I think one of the best politicians of his generation. One more on the political sphere. Shattered is an amazing book for anybody interested in American politics. It's a book by two authors who were embedded on the Hillary Clinton campaign, and they were charged with writing the book about the first woman to become president of the United States.
And of course, it
went wrong. It was a terrible result from my perspective, many people's. But they got a much better book, and the book is really quite powerful about how it went wrong. Quite hard to read if you're a Clinton fan. Now, when I go away on holidays or want to kind of tune out, I'm a John Grisham fan. I think John Grisham is just. It enables me to switch off. I think he's the best crime thriller writer that there is.
What about television?
Yeah, television is definitely something I enjoy. I've lately been watching The Crown, which is. I preferred the previous series, being.
I think the fifth series has been disappointing.
I think it's a bit disappointing. And I think the closer it gets to. Would have been too controversial. I think the closer it gets to modern time, the more one wonders the accuracy or how much people are actually putting in opinion. Whereas I certainly felt you were able to watch previous versions and maybe learn or relearn or refamiliarize yourself with some historical events. I watched a great Daniel Craig movie there, The Glass Onion.
Oh, yes.
I watched that over Christmas.
As many people did at Christmas.
I think so. I'm planning on starting The Patient, which I think is on
that's worth watching.
Disney Plus. I haven't seen that yet.
No, that's Donald Gleeson and
yes, Donald Gleeson, yeah.
Definitely worth watching. But I believe you're a child of Glen Roe. Again, your constituency.
Well, it was, and that's not, yeah, that is coincidental though, I can assure you, but that growing up again locally in Wicklow, we used to always, great excitement locally when you were a school kid and you'd see the filming of Glen Roe happening, which happened in the village of Kilcool, just a few minutes from where I live. But Glen Roe, like probably anybody of my age or a little bit older or a little bit younger, it signified the end of the weekend. And you were hoping you could stay up until the music came on and your parents sent you to bed then.
Let's hear a clip of Dinny played by the late Joe Lynch and Miley played by the late Mick Lally.
There's tea. Have enough of tea. Sweet cake. Nice. Should I have me dinner? As far as I could see, you were having a lot more than your dinner. I'll be God now. Is a man not entitled to give his wife a nice, friendly squeeze without having half the country bursting in on top of them? Don't get me wrong. I was glad to see you getting back to normal. We're always back to normal. Matter of opinion. Would it be in order to ask, is there anything stirring?
No, it would not be another task if there's anything stirring. Because not only is there nothing stirring, but there's going to be nothing stirring.
Glen Roe, listen, we've a minute left. Tell us, you have a story to finish. We asked for a cultural buried treasure. You want to talk about Seamus Heaney?
Yeah, well, obviously Seamus Heaney, thankfully, is not a hidden cultural treasure. He's a national treasure. But recently I had the honour of launching a book written by locals in my community in Ashford called In the Ivy. And Seamus, what I think a lot of people don't know, and I want everybody to know, was actually Seamus Heaney wrote his best poetry in his view and did his best writing in County Wicklow. And he had a description in the book that I launched of Wicklow. And he said, often when I'm in my own car driving down from Dublin to Wicklow in spring or early summer, or indeed at any time of the year, I get this sudden joy from the sheer fact of the mountains to my right and the sea to my left, the flow of farmland, the sweep of the road and the lift of the sky. And to me, that's something that always has, that just encapsulates in the best way ever, County Wicklow. And there's a little walk now in the Devil's Glen in Ashford, named the Heaney Walk, in his memory.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.